Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Universal Furniture. They're doing a special giveaway just for our listeners where you can win one of their awesome leather chairs that was recently featured in Traditional Home magazine, valued at over $1,700.
Woo!
Head over to universalfurniture.com/YHL for all the details on how to enter now through April 1st. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today, we're outlining some of the projects we're doing to get our house ready to sell, including another bathroom renovation, but this one won't be as dusty. Plus, can journaling help you save money? And an accidental rant about The Bachelor.
I feel like I'm still catching my breath from last week.
It's been a big week, you guys.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, last week's episode, which I'll link in the show notes, we talked about our big move to Florida. All the details on why we're doing that, when we're doing that, yada, yada, are in that episode from last week. And then also we did a follow-up blog post on the blog that I'll link as well with some more details. So
the internet had questions, you guys.
Yes, lots of questions. I guess today we want to talk a little bit about what we've been doing since the decision to move, because it has been a whirlwind for us, not just in announcing it. I mean, that was a lot. I think your DMs have never been so flooded.
They were flooded, but it was so nice, you guys. Everyone was so enthusiastic. We appreciate it so much. It was really fun to figure this out for ourselves in the bubble, kind of like John said, to like make sure this decision was right for our family. And then it was super fun to share this decision with you guys and hear everyone's sort of encouragement and excitement. We heard from so many people who did similar things, which was amazing. People with kids our kids' ages that just really like reassured us. And we just loved hearing how it worked out so well for other families, because it just feels like when you're doing it in a bubble, you're just deciding if it's right for your family and you don't want other people's feedback to sway you. But then it sure does feel good when you decide to do it and other people confirm
right. That
it's going to be a good idea.
Yeah. There are several times during the process and still that we felt like crazy people. And it's helpful to hear there are other crazy people out there.
I also got really hilarious comments about A, it's going to make my curly hair game real strong, which I appreciate.
The humidity?
Yes. B, it's definitely a Jersey move. Lots of Jersey girls end up in Florida. It's like all of our dreams when we're young is to live in Florida, and I'm living the dream.
You know, a lot of Jersey people end up in Virginia too. When I went to college in Virginia, you were either from Virginia or New Jersey. Those were like the two states people came from.
It's true. And you know what the third one was that I got a whole lot of comments about?
What?
You're going to get a lot of delicious shrimp. And I was like, oh, heck yes, I am. I will be there.
She already had shrimp on our trip.
I really did. I had to test the merchandise before I bought, guys.
But the other thing I wanted to say about feeling crazy was that we are in this kind of whirlwind right now of trying to tie up all the loose ends and get things moving. Like there's a lot of balls in the air right now, because I made this observation to my uncle the other day that in our history, like our entire almost 15 years together, we have only ever sold two houses, our first house and our second house. And suddenly now, in the course of just a couple months, we have to sell three houses all at once.
Right. And the duplex is almost as good as sold. In fact, when you hear this, it might have already closed, or if not, it's impending. So that feels good. But on top of the other two we have to sell, oh yeah, we're buying one too. So right. It feels like there's a lot of phone calls. There's like agents and inspections and payments and DocuSigns.
Yes.
Like we're in the heat of all the like paperwork, and it's not lost on us that this is a big job, but we're just totally excited to do it. It almost feels like I've had 10 coffees when I've only had one buy. I'm like buzzing with caffeine. And it's because I think there's something, what's the word I'm thinking of? I always lose this word.
Invigorating?
Yes, exactly. There is something invigorating about having so many balls in the air that you literally can't even sit down and stop. Like you have to keep going and your energy level stays high and you gain this momentum.
No, I think the word you're looking for is exhausting.
See, I don't feel exhausted. I feel like I go to bed and I'm like, holy cow, I have never done that many things in one day. I think I shared on Instagram a couple days ago that I had 17 plus miles in one day on my Fitbit.
And we didn't leave the house.
We didn't leave the house. I was going to the attic. I was going downstairs to the garage. I was carrying stuff up. I was carrying stuff down. I was sorting stuff in the laundry room. I was decluttering and minimizing. And I know everyone has asked me to cover that. I promise you, I will do a very detailed, probably post and podcast about it, because I'm learning a ton, but I don't feel like my journey is over yet. I have just begun. So stand by for that. But it is definitely coming.
Your journey.
My decluttering journey. I just think it's funny because everyone's like, will you share that? And I'm like, yeah, I will. It's like a really big thing. We're going from, you know, a house that's twice the size to one that's half the size.
Yeah. I also think it's just been an interesting switch that has flipped for us, because now we sort of have these new goggles on for our house about like, what do we need to do to it to get it ready to sell? Because, you know, it's pretty much ready as it is, apart from some big things like we mentioned, and we'll talk about more in a moment, like our hall bathroom being unrenovated.
It's pretty much ready to sell, except the seashell-shaped sinks. There's two.
Right. But also little things like, you know, there's paint that needs to be touched up, caulk that has popped that needs to be re-caulked. Like, there's things around our house, because we've been here for almost 7 years, that like, yes, we made look pretty and perfect when we did the project. Like, for instance, our covered porch in the backyard, which we often call our veranda when we're feeling fancy.
We say veranda very ironically.
Yes. It was completed, like, I think we did that project maybe in 2015 or so. And we haven't really done much to it since. So, like, the paint needed touching up. So I spent, like, a few hours yesterday repainting that room just so it looked fresh and ready and like it did back in the photos in 2015.
I know. It's looking fresh as a daisy now. And totally, everything you do before you sell, and I hear this all the time from sellers when I'm staging, it always makes you feel like, dang it, I should have done this so I could have enjoyed it.
Right.
Like, years ago, we could have retouched that stuff and made it look fresh and clean and amazing. But instead, you wait until you're leaving and you don't even really get to enjoy it.
Yeah, like our house is going to look the best it has looked all at once, probably at any moment here in a couple weeks.
I know.
Well, and speaking of a couple weeks, like I also had a shift in timeline too, because I think when I was first picturing this whole thing, it's like, oh, the good news about not moving till after the school year is over in June gives us like 4 months to get stuff done and get the house ready. But no, it's not 4 months. Like 4 months is when we leave. We need to sell the house sooner rather than later, because like the spring selling season is the hottest. Like that's when you have the best chance to sell your house. And for us in Richmond, it's typically in that like March, April zone. So we really only have a few weeks to get it ready to list, because all those other months are needed for the actual like closing process. And then we'll probably end up like renting back or having a long close date so that we can stay here. We don't have to move within Richmond before June.
Yeah, I think it'll all work out, because a lot of people who buy in the spring just expect to be in there in the summer before the new school year starts. Yeah. So I think we'll be just fine. But it definitely is one of those things like you can't wait until June 15th if you're moving on June 15th. You have to get your house listed and sold and then do whatever rent back you want to do and then pack. And by the way, if you're downsizing, you have to get rid of half of your stuff and put the rest in a truck and get it to Florida. And how are you moving the golf cart? Don't worry, guys. I figured that out today. I called my golf cart girl in Cape Charles. She's putting it in a truck and driving it down for us. She's amazing. Shout out to Elizabeth. We love you very, very much. But anyway, it's like all those logistics, like for figuring out the golf cart was like a 20-minute call today. And there's also like figuring out what we're going to do with the hall bathroom, because like I don't want to sell this house with seashell-shaped sinks.
So let's talk about the hall bathroom, because we have a plan for it and the plan is in motion. The state of our hall bathroom, like it's unrenovated. We have not done a full gut job renovation on it in the time that we've lived here. It still has the original tile that was put in the house almost 40 years ago.
Yes. Same vanity. It's a big double vanity. It looks really nice space-wise, but it does not look very nice quality-wise. Like, it has been beaten up. It has those seashell-shaped sinks. It has, like, a curved backsplash.
We'll put pictures of it in the show notes so you can see it both in the original state in which we bought it and what we have done to it in this time, because actually, for our second book, we did a little like mini paint makeover to it, which was effectively just painting the vanity and the walls white.
It really helped. You'll see from the before to the after, it's like 50% better. And months ago, before we even knew we were doing the Florida thing, we were debating it, but we weren't sure we were doing it. We hired the same guy who did those new cabinet fronts for our friend's kitchen. I'll put a link in the show notes, but her name's Teresa, and she renovated her kitchen and used this local guy named Billy, and he refaced her existing cabinet and did inset doors, and they just look so polished. And so, amazingly, past John and Sherry were very smart, because we hired Billy and said, we don't want to rip out that big vanity. We love how big it is. We love the space it takes up. We just want to get new doors.
Yeah, I think our brains already had started to move to the hall bathroom while we were in the midst of our master bathroom, because we knew it was next. And we had just seen the work Billy had done in our friend's kitchen, and so we had been in contact with him, and we said, like, hey, will you come over and just check out our hall bathroom? Because at the time, at least, I think I was still just in the consideration phase to see, like, is this the right solution to update this bathroom? Like, does it make sense to not rip everything out and demo everything and just work with the existing cabinet frame. Because again, what he's doing is just adding new doors to existing cabinet boxes. And when he came and quoted us the new doors, it was about $750 to create, I think, 14 new doors and paint them and install them. They also new drawer boxes, so like it would function like a newer vanity. And I mean, $750 is not a small amount of money, but that's about what we paid for just the double vanity, like furniture piece, the freestanding one in our bathroom. So actually felt like a steal knowing the quality that we would get and the way it would make the room look updated when we weren't changing anything else about it.
Exactly. And speaking of not changing other things, we debated retiling because it does have that original yellow tile. We have a soft spot in our heart for that cute original tile that's like pink or yellow, you know, those kind of vintage looking bathrooms, because in our second house, we had a little yellow bathroom there and we loved it so much. And I think we did like $37 worth of updates. I'll link it in the show notes. Maybe it was 51. It was some very small amount. And we refreshed the bathroom and everyone was just like, oh, it's so cute to save that and to keep something vintage and to embrace the vintage and bring in like white and black and just all these colors that look great with this vintage tile. So our concept was we at least need to explore saving the yellow tile if we can clean it up enough and caulk around the edges and make it look great. We would love to save it, but we also should bring home some new tile just to make sure the full shebang is not the right choice for this bathroom. And long story short, we brought home a lot of different tile options, including things that were kind of walking the line, like white hex tile that looks vintage but isn't. And you know what we decided, guys? We like the yellow tile more than anything else. Like, we returned everything we brought home, even though it wouldn't have been a big deal to retile the floor, because it just looked so cute with the yellow.
Well, and it felt silly to rip things out just for the sake of ripping it out. Like, yes, it does look a little bit vintage, but if we can do enough in the room to make it look incorporated into the design and like intentional and something that we were embracing and not trying to like hide, I think there's no reason to replace it.
And the other thing is that it's a kids' hall bathroom. So to me, if you can be playful somewhere, it's going to be in a kids' bathroom.
Right, that's true.
Bringing in like new things that feel crisp, like a new vanity front and a new countertop.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about the new countertop.
Yeah, we're going to get new countertops. We're going with quartz. You guys know we love quartz.
Well, here's the thing with the countertops is, so the seashell shaped sinks that are in there are, you know, incorporated into the countertop. So the only way to get rid of the seashell sinks is to get a whole new counter. And it's like kind of a creamy yellow old, what do you think the old material was?
Like solid surface?
Is something that like that.
Like a very, very, very old version of Corian, but like yellow swirled Corian.
Right. So what we did was we went to a local stone yard to their remnant section. And the way at least this stone yard works is like all the remnants are the same price, no matter the material. So we basically said like, we have our pick of basically anything for the same price, whether it was granite or marble or quartz or whatever. And so we found a piece of quartz that looks nice and updated. It will be very durable for a kids' hall bathroom. And so we're going to have that installed with normal rectangular sinks. So
no more seashells.
We will have no more seashells in the entire house.
Maybe as a joke when I stage it, I'm going to put a seashell in that bathroom and just see who notices. Just like one seashell on the counter. It will look like a decorative accessory, but it will be a wink and a nod to the seashell shaped sinks.
I feel like then you should fill the seashell with like a bunch of leftover hotel shampoos or soaps.
We're going to really go whole hog on this.
I feel like that's what a seashell in a bathroom is for.
Maybe, or potpourri.
I was going to say, or potpourri, a little sachet.
Chanté. I can't not say Chanté.
Okay, RuPaul.
If someone says sachet, guys, a little trivia about me, I will say Chanté every time.
Anyways, that stuff is all in process so that we do have this like little update to the hall bathroom going on so that it will look ready when it's time to list. It won't be as expensive or as messy or as time consuming as a full gut job.
But I think it's going to be cute, guys. Mark my words. I truly anticipate that I'm going to like these cabinets more than our master bathroom cabinets. And I'm going to be mad that I didn't use Billy in our bathroom.
Maybe we can get Billy to make a trip to Florida.
I've already been thinking about that.
Okay. Or maybe there is a Florida version of Billy.
No, we're going to take him on vacation. We're going to be like, come down, hang out on the beach for a week.
We're going to kidnap him.
That's right. Billy, I hope you're not listening because it's going to be a sneak attack.
We're going to kidnap him with all of his tools and materials.
Right.
Well, on that note.
On that uplifting note.
I would like to go into a segment we like to call, Can We Just Talk About... Actually, Actually, before we get into the Can We Just Talk About segment, this is John and Sherry from the future.
Hello, friends. Boy, do we have news about what happened.
Well, I guess actually we're still in the past to you guys who are hearing it, but the future from the voices you just heard in the past segment.
This is very confusing. We're John and Sherry a few days after we recorded this podcast, but before you hear it, because this wouldn't be on the podcast if it was after you heard it.
Very clear now. After we recorded that whole thing about the bathroom, we found out that we had been bumped up on the counter installation schedule.
Woo woo!
And we were able to get Billy on the calendar as well. So actually, by the time you guys are hearing this, a lot of the things that we just talked about will already be done.
Yes. So we're going to put some updates and pictures and all the progress stuff on Instagram, of course. And then obviously on the blog, we will do a big reveal with a budget breakdown and all that eventually. But for instant gratification, follow along on Instagram because we share things quicker over there than, you know, they eventually pop up on the blog.
Right. Let's go back to John and Sherry in the past and pick up where we left off at Can We Just Talk About.
We need that music that's like blah, loom, blah, loom, blah, loom, blah, loom.
Can we just talk about Kakibo? I hope I'm saying that right. I just read it on an article on CNBC and that's how they say you pronounce it. Kakibo. It is apparently a Japanese budgeting method that has been around for over 100 years. And I guess it translates to household financial ledger.
Oh.
Which sounds a lot less fancy than Kakibo. I thought it might be interesting to talk about because the article was fascinating to me. Because, you know, we like talking about budgets, whether it's just like for saving money or for saving up for renovation.
John loves a spreadsheet.
I love a spreadsheet. And this Kakibo method, as I understand it from this article, which I'm going to disclaim that I'm sure I don't fully understand it because I haven't really gone much deeper than this yet. But it sort of reinforces all the things that we've learned about budgeting that's important to like keep track of your finances so that you can see areas in which you might be able to save. Or you also might catch places where you're like spending unnecessarily. Like that time I realized I had two different newspaper subscriptions to the same newspaper. It was going through my personal budget that helped me catch that. So
they were online newspaper subscriptions, just so you know, because John would totally notice if we got the same newspaper every day.
One was showing up to the front door. One was coming to the back door. No, but reading about this, one just made me remember why I think budgeting is important in general. But the specific thing about this method that I found interesting was that Kakibo is all about keeping a physical, handwritten, pen to paper budget spreadsheet. So like not an Excel spreadsheet, not an app, not any of that digital stuff that we rely on, but actually like taking the time to physically and laboriously go through and write down what you're spending and what it cost.
It is like the analog method, much like we have talked about how we use a paper planner and people cannot believe it. They're like, how is John the spreadsheet guy? You guys do a podcast, you have a blog, you use Instagram. Like we are digital people, yet for some reason, we cannot ditch the paper calendar. It just works for us. There's one of them, so we both have to go to it to write things in it. We see conflicts. It just seems to work for us. So it's funny that this is sort of like the analog method to budgeting.
Yes, and I think it kind of reinforces some of the reasons why we find a physical planner works for us is because they make the argument that going through this, they call it almost like meditative, and I wouldn't say writing in my planner is meditative, but, you know, taking some time out to dedicate to this activity instead of letting like an app or an online spreadsheet do it for you quickly or automatically makes you connected to the process a bit more and helps you feel the information. And I think actually taking the time to say like, wow, I spent $12 at Starbucks on just a random drive-through helps you kind of process why you did that. Was it necessary? Did you need it? Could you have lived without it? Sort of the things that might help you adjust your spending if that's what you're looking to do.
Well, I have to say that I have found, and I know there's probably studies that back this up and probably other studies that don't because that's how studies work. But I have found that when I take notes with my hand, I can remember. I remember like where in the line something is. If I highlight it, that even further reinforces it. I remember, oh, I used a pink highlighter on that word and it was on the bottom of the page. Like my brain creates a map when I handwrite something in a way that it doesn't when I write something on a computer.
Well, actually, the article I was reading links to several studies.
Oh,
speaking of studies,
bingo.
That talk about the mental benefits and actually the health benefits, I think specifically of journaling, but taking the time to handwrite things. And they say things like they actually done studies where like the people who took time to do journaling. So this is not budgeting or planning, but like, you know, processing events by writing them down. All these things, like they get over breakups faster, they recover from health issues faster, they experience less trauma from traumatic events. Like all these things that prove that going through the analog process of processing your feelings and the events of your life on paper actually help you work through them more.
That's really interesting.
It almost compels me to try some of this out. Kind of like when we were talking to Emily Lay on that episode a few weeks ago about how, like, I am curious about the idea of bullet journaling and these people who, you know, track little details about their life in some physical analog form.
Like, I think you'd love it for, like, how many runs you took, how many books you read.
Yeah. Well, I think it takes a lot of things that we're used to now tracking digitally. Like, if you have a Fitbit or you have an Apple Watch or something that tracks your steps or your mileage or how much you slept, like, putting those things to paper might help you actually do more with the information rather than just collecting it. Because I know even when I used to have a Fitbit, like, I was really into it for the first few weeks and I was always checking it and I was trying to beat my goals and actually, like, see progress. But eventually it became just kind of like background noise and I forgot about it, which is why I don't wear it anymore.
It's somewhere in one of our drawers. During our decluttering session, we will find it.
I don't even know if we have it anymore, but anyways, I thought it was an interesting overlap of a lot of things that we talk about, like budgeting and how you can be more mindful about what you spend and maybe change your spending habits. And I should also say that the article says there's other parts to this whole Kakibo method besides just writing stuff down. I think there's also a series of questions you ask yourselves about purchases as you go through the list. And as you're thinking about purchases, like, can I afford this? Do I need this? Do I have space for it? I think one of the questions was even like, how did I come across the item? Was it because I was searching for a new couch because my old couch was all ratty and torn? Or was it because I was bored and I walked into a furniture store and I saw a pretty couch that was on sale? Like,
ooh, the emotional place you were in when you bought or wanted to buy said item is deeply telling.
Yes.
Deeply telling. Like, John, was it an Instagram ad?
The answer is always yes. Did I buy it because Instagram advertised it to me? Yes.
Not so much anymore. You've been burned a few times, my friend.
Was it a need? No. Yeah, I've really
cut back.
Would
you feel bad if you wrote that on your Kakibo? Yes.
I would. I probably would be too ashamed to put it in there. Be like, that'll go in the secret Kakibo ledger. So I will link in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast this article that introduced me to this concept of Kakibo. And I don't know, maybe we'll see if we actually try it out or if we just somehow try to map this analog method onto our digital bookkeeping.
Let's try it for a week. We'll get back to you guys.
What? No, we're too busy for this.
No, we're going to do this. I at least want to try it. I think it will be meditative, like they said. It was funny how you were like, I don't think it's meditative. And I'm like, oh my gosh, whenever I write, I kind of zone out and I feel very zen and I just like think and breathe and there's no sort of pressing time limit. It's just like a thing I do to chill out.
Okay.
You're going to have to be confronted with your Instagram shopping habits. That's why you're putting this off.
I have stopped shopping on Instagram, I promise.
Well, speaking of our spending habits, don't you have a declaration?
Oh, yeah. I am digging something that has to do with my shopping habits. So we will get into that after we take a quick break. Okay, hands up if you want some free furniture. Not if you're driving, though. Then keep your hands on your steering wheel. But this week's sponsor, Universal Furniture, is hosting a giveaway that's exclusive to our listeners. So that means one of you lovely people is about to score a free piece of furniture that's valued at nearly $1,700.
It's a lot of cheddar. And it's an awesome leather chair. It's not full of cheddar.
No.
You can't see it. I'm going to describe it to you.
Well, let me jump in and just say that you can see it. You just have to go to universalfurniture.com/YHL. That's also where you can get all the giveaway details on how to enter and how you can increase your odds of taking home the prize.
But back to the chair.
Yes.
It was recently featured in Traditional Home Magazine. It's called the Shannon Chair. It's one of those chic leather chairs with a crisp chrome base and a super soft buttery leather seat. Like, you might want to lick it. I might want to lick it. You might not want to lick it.
I suggest just sitting in it. And the winner of this giveaway will get their Shannon Chair in either a classic chestnut brown leather or what they call Burnham Black. Again, just go to universalfurniture.com/YHL for all the entry details. The giveaway ends on April 1st. So again, that's universalfurniture.com/YHL. You know, a couple weeks ago, Sherry talked about her no buying clothing for a year challenge.
Oh, by the way, update on that.
Oh man, okay.
Everyone is asking me, wait, you're moving? So you have to buy clothes? No, guys.
Wait, what? Why would you have to buy clothes because you're moving?
I don't know, but it's a climate I already dress for. I have a few pairs of jean shorts. I have a few tank tops. I'll be fine. I survive for 3 months at the beach house, and I wash my clothes every week. So if I can wash them and survive for 3 months, it stands to reason I'll be able to wear them for 6 months or 10 months. And eventually, if they fall apart, I will report back. If I have to buy even one tank top, I'm going to tell you. I get it if it was a totally different climate. Like if it was much, much, much hotter than I was used to, or much, much, much colder than I was used to, I'd have to change.
If there were circumstances we never experienced before and therefore didn't have any clothing for, I would understand it.
Right. But I'm like, dudes, I'm just going to live in shorts, t-shirts, dresses, and flip-flops, which I already do.
Don't people know when it's hot you need fewer clothes on your body?
I know. Maybe my one bathing suit will wear out, although I do have two of the same bathing suit because I was so afraid one would wear out. I got a second. So I think I'm good, guys.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Who knows? Maybe we're not anticipating something that will come up. I forgot where I was going, but let's just play the music. So kind of in line with Sherry's not buying clothes for a year, I was thinking about that and then also the conversation we had with Emily Lay. Yes, here it comes up again. Another Floridian, Emily Lay.
The day we announced, guys, Emily Lay got on Instagram and said, I take full credit. I did this.
Take it, Emily. Anyways, we had a conversation with her about this realization she had about the difference between ordering your books from Amazon versus going to the local library, and how there was such a difference in sort of the immediacy and instant gratification of like, do a buy now on Amazon versus the, I don't know, mindful, meditative, analog, this is also going back to the Kakibo discussion, activity of going to the library and like spending time with people and making the trip and, you know, exploring the books, and sort of how that is such a different activity than just ordering something online.
Yeah, it's like an experience, whereas I don't think you'd ever describe ordering something on Amazon as an experience, right? Unless it's a bad experience. Right.
It's not good if you have to use that word.
It shows up and it's covered in mold. That might be an experience.
But anyways, it brought together some things I was thinking about for a challenge for myself for 2020, which was to not buy any books from Amazon.
Not a single book.
Yes. And that's partially just because I want to buy fewer books and rely on the library more. We already do most of our books from the library, so it's not like a huge leap.
I feel like they know me. I've always got something on hold.
Yeah. I got an email today about something I have to pick up.
For me.
Yep. We also, in the summertime, use those little free libraries a lot. Like, we are already not buying most of our books, but there are still moments where there's something we want that's not available at the library, it's on hold at the library, and there's a long wait, or like, I don't know, we just want it quickly. And so we do that instant gratification thing of ordering it online. And so I thought by like making a hard line, cold turkey promise to myself that I wouldn't give in to that instant gratification, it would help me, one, rely on this like service of the library that is something I think a lot of people underappreciate in their communities.
It's an amazing public service.
I will admit I'm biased because I used to work at a library and my mom used to work at a library. So I love libraries anyways.
Please tell them about your parade.
Oh, yes. I represented the local library in our 4th of July parade twice.
Tell them what you pushed.
Well, it wasn't just me. It was several of the employees. We pushed library carts down the street and they were decorated and we had choreography.
It was like picture shopping carts weaving in and out, but they're library carts.
Yes. We either like walked around in a circle together or we spun our library carts in front of us in a sequence. There was not books on them, I should point out.
Yeah.
We're not reckless librarians, okay? Still have to care for the books, but we wanted to show our library pride in
your
the 4th
library
of July parade.
Fun side. That right, was your exactly. Wild side.
Exactly. I would say part of it was just to sort of like rely on this resource of the library. But I do have one caveat to it, because I do think there is some importance in purchasing books as well sometimes, because I do like to support, especially people we know who have written books and things like that. Getting it from the library does support them in a way, because the more books that libraries stock, you know, if you are requesting a book that they don't stock, then they're going to order them. And so you can still support authors by getting the books of the library. I don't want to pretend that's not a supportive act. But, you know, sometimes our friends put out a book and I want to be part of, you know, the enthusiasm of getting that. So the caveat I've made to my library only thing is that if there is a book that we need to purchase or want to purchase for some reason, I'm going to purchase it through a local bookstore.
Yes. So if he can't find it at the library, or it's just unavailable and he really wants to read it, or we want to support one of our friends who has something fresh and new coming out, or just an author we love, if I want a book that's going to stay on my shelves forever, obviously can't do that with a library book. We are going to go to like an indie bookseller or a local bookseller. Can we go online indie, or we're just walking into a local place?
We can. I've already done that, because there was a book that I wanted to get. It was a cookbook that someone recommended. And once I actually cook something, I might dig it on the podcast. We'll find out. But it was not stocked in our local bookstore, but I went to their website and I ordered it online through their website and had it delivered to me. So like, it was not dissimilar from the Amazon experience. It was a little bit more expensive and it took a little bit more time to get, but at least I was still supporting the local bookstore.
Right. Well, we do sign books through a bookstore in Richmond called Fountain Books. Woo woo, Fountain. They're just awesome. We walk in, we sign things for them in bulk, and they sell them, you know, through the holidays to people. They ship them out to people who want a signed book, but they don't live in Richmond. So it is really nice to work with local bookstores. I often find that they just will go above and beyond. Like the fact that they will ship things personally. It's literally a person in Richmond going to the post office and putting a book in the mail.
And not to get on a soapbox about supporting authors and stuff, but I also saw on a Twitter thread at one point.
They're going to be like, but buy our book. Oh, no.
I'm going to get on that soapbox in a moment. No, I was going to say I saw a Twitter thread about this once that was outlining the importance of shopping at local bookstores when you're trying to support an author. Because if you call your local bookstore and ask them if they stock it, like, can I pre-order this book? It is almost you helping market that person's book, because the bookseller may not be aware of this book, especially if it's a small author or a new author. And they, by hearing your request, will go investigate the book. And they said, and many times they'll order more than one copy, because they're like, if someone is passionate enough about this book to call me and ask to pre-order this book, then maybe I should get 5 copies just so I have others on hand, because there must be other people out there interested in it or who would like this book. And so the ripple effect of taking that time to shop your local bookstore can sometimes be greater than you realize it is.
That's so nice. I love that.
So I just thought it would be a good challenge for myself to change some of my shopping habits and also hopefully do it in a way that's more supportive of some of the people and businesses in our local community, whether that be the people who work at the library, the library system, or the independent bookstores. And last thing I'll say, don't at me if we still link to some books on Amazon, because if we talk about a book on the podcast, I can't link it to your local library. I will try to also link to a website called IndieBound, which is where you can find your local bookstore that stocks a book. But I just know still a lot of people out there, it's easiest to get things from Amazon. So that's still a natural place for us to link to, so that if we want you guys to hear about a book, you'll be able to find it easily.
Right. I think it's like, look at our link as just a way to find the information about the book, the author, when it releases, all that stuff.
Then
shop wherever you'd like. Get it from the library. Look at your little free libraries. Maybe you'll hit the jackpot. It'll be in there.
Yes.
You never know.
I feel like I was on lots of soapboxes during that I didn't mean to. But I'm getting off of them now so you can tell people about yours.
I forget what I'm digging.
Something on TV.
Oh, you guys, settle in. Because in this time of a lot going on in our lives, we more than ever need decompression. So we have been having a lot of fun binging Netflix shows. First, there was The Circle, which I fully implore you. I don't even encourage you. I implore you to watch The Circle. Get past the first episode. I heard from like 4 people who were like, I couldn't get past the first episode. You have to. The first episode is not great.
Yeah, you're going to hate everyone after the first episode, but then you will fall in love with them.
It is worth it. Just stick with it. It's much like DIY. The first hour is not the greatest. And what I truly can say about The Circle is that the humans on that show are fantastic. I love them all.
I know, but you're not digging The Circle.
Right. So this week, I'm digging another show, which basically you guys all told us about. When I said I like The Circle, immediately I got a deluge of DMs and emails and comments that were like, you have to watch Love is Blind. It is a sort of a similar concept in that it's real people going through a real thing on a reality show, but it's not like Survivor. They're not on an island. They're not competing, really.
Well, yeah, they're not competing, but it is still a social experiment, as they call it, because the setup is that it's a dating show. These people date without ever seeing each other. Like, it's a literal blind date. They are sequestered in separate rooms, or pods, as they call them, and they talk through, like, a wall.
You also have to get through the first episode or two where they're like, oh, I like the Cubs, too. Like, there's a lot of, like, we have this in common because we both have golden retrievers.
Right.
It's, like, better than The Bachelor off the bat, though. Do you guys know I don't like The Bachelor? My beef with The Bachelor and The Bachelorette are that there is a power dynamic that is off, and I really hate it. I don't like the idea of a whole bunch of women fighting over a guy. I don't like the idea of a whole bunch of guys fighting over a girl. I can't understand how they all think they'd be compatible.
Are you on a soapbox now?
I'm on a soapbox, guys. Because imagine you were dating someone, but a bunch of other girls were dating him too, and you won. You still wouldn't feel like you won, because you'd have to see him in the fantasy suite with someone else.
People who like The Bachelor, and I'm not saying that like as, oh, those people. It's because it's entertainment. There's lots of shameless shows that we all like as guilty pleasures. But I will say, I think the Love is Blind show is nice that there isn't that power dynamic. There's there's like a bunch of women and there's a bunch of men, and they're all just trying to like almost like speed dating, like seeing which matchup works the best. But they're doing the speed dating in these pods where they can't see each other, so that the experiment is like, can you truly fall in love with someone without knowing what they look like? Like, just based on their personality and their voice. And
there's a lot of using the word soul.
Yes, if their souls are compatible. The thing I...
That sounds so bad. Just give it a chance, guys.
The thing I don't like about the show, but it does make for interesting entertainment, is that the people get engaged. There's like several couples that like propose within a matter of days without ever seeing each other. So it does have that kind of like hyper reality element to these dating TV shows.
Well, at first I was like, I would never do that. Like, I would never say yes if I couldn't see someone. I know that sounds superficial, but I don't mean it that way. I just, in a week of talking to someone on the phone or wherever, can't imagine getting engaged. It's just not how my life works.
Yeah.
Then I started to understand why they get engaged early. Do you know why?
Why?
They get to see each other when they get engaged. So suddenly I was like, oh, I would do that, because then you get to really hang out. They actually go hang out together for a while on like a vacation, and then they go back into the real world. Like,
yes.
John and I were talking in the car about how much we enjoy seeing them live in an apartment together and like get to real life and go to work and do all the things normal people do, because you don't ever get to see that on The Bachelor. It's like these perfect dates, and then they disappear, and then they break up, and you're like, what happened?
That's where I think the strength of this show is, if you can get past the gimmicky part and the fact that they get engaged after just a few days, you actually get to see people kind of test out these speedy relationships in the real world. Yes, it's not exactly the real world because it's still being filmed and all that stuff.
But it's like kind of a little apartment. Like, these are not like suites that are gorgeous in a hotel. These are like one bedroom apartment.
Well, and they get their phones back, so they have the complications of like social media. They go back to their jobs and stuff. So they do some of these more real world things, like actually integrate one another into their real lives a bit more than some of these other shows. Like you were just saying on The Bachelor, like, yes, there's the proposal at the end, and we all kind of know that like once they get back to their real lives, they're going to break up in probably just a few weeks.
Once Ben Higgins and whatever that blonde girl's name, Lauren
JoJo?
Something. No, JoJo's different. Lauren something. Lauren C or Lauren W or Lauren something. When they broke up, I was like, this show is garbage, because they were so perfect together. And if they couldn't make it work, it's the power dynamic issue. One person always feels like lesser than the other.
Now we know why Sherry's so burned by The Bachelor.
Literally, I was fine with The Bachelor until that happened, and then I could not get over it.
Okay. I think what we're trying to say is that even if you hate dating shows, Love is Blind is a very fascinating one, because although it falls into some of the same traps of most other television dating shows, there's also this interesting element where you get to see people road test their relationships in the quote-unquote real world a bit more. And so you are getting a closer test as to whether this social experiment of dating blind can really hold up in real life.
Agree. And also, Bachelor in Paradise, totally fine with it. Equal balance of power. I am fine with Bachelor in Paradise. Don't tell me to watch it, I do. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And don't hate me, but I'm going to hop on one last soapbox. If you want to support podcasts you enjoy, maybe this one, please take a moment to leave them a rating or review wherever you listen. In Apple Podcasts, it only takes a click or two, and you can do it right from your phone.
And I laughed out loud about what this person did while they listened. Leela on Instagram said she used our podcast to drown out the sound of the 10 cats she was transporting in her car from one animal shelter to another. And my favorite part, she said, one just pooped.
That paints quite the mental picture. Godspeed, Leela.
And there are lots of pictures in this week's show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast, including the before state of our hall bathroom and some photos of my friend Teresa's awesome cabinetry by Billy.
And I'll throw in those links to the articles about Kakibo. Later.
Bye.
Anyways, I will link in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast.
Partycast.
Party.
Gardy.
Younghouselove.com/CardiBPodcast.
Diamond windows with the chains.